if you're wondering what station you're listening to, I've never heard this version of this.
Really?
No, this was, is not like the radio hit version.
That was, you may be thinking of a different song. There have been two hit songs called I Kissed a Girl. That was Jill Sobule back in 1996, I think, or 1997. Okay. The other one was Katy Perry. That was maybe 5 or 6 years ago.
Okay, then I don't know who this person is, but I'm sad that she's not with us anymore.
Yeah, and a bizarre story. Yeah, so like I said, huge hit for Jill Sobule back in the mid to late 90s. But yeah, she was, and it's a weird one. TMZ is reporting on this. They're doing a tox screen now to try to figure out cause of death. She was found in a house that was on fire. Her home was apparently engulfed in flames, and that's why first responders were there in the first place. Then they started searching for her, found her already gone, but they're also trying to determine if she died before the fire started. They don't know yet.
In her 60s?
66.
Okay, what else did she do? Why else would we know her?
She had a...
You're like me and didn't hear the name before.
Yeah, she had a couple of minor hits that I'm trying to remember the names of right now. Supermodel was her other big one that was in the Clueless soundtrack. So if you remember the movie Clueless, she had a song in there. I Kissed a Girl hit big time. And there were four or five other sort of minor hits that she had in the mid-90s that were, you know, pop radio hits.
Okay. All right. Well, good to know. It's kind of a rough morning news-wise. Besides that, I want to talk about street closures for a second for the Graham Hoffman funeral, which is today, because that's coming up a little bit later. Visitation starts in an hour. And then Pettis County this morning had a problem with a couple of deputies. That, again, we keep having this problem of, I know I keep saying this, but if you work in some kind of job where you have to deal with the public, I don't know. Every day we have another story like this, but we'll get to that here coming up in a minute. But yes, it is today. The funeral procession and the wake for Graham Hoffman. So again, it starts, we can kind of go through the schedule here, but the procession is at 3 p.m. So that's when you need to be thinking about roads being closed and that kind of thing. It is going to include passing by Station 42, which was his last assignment.
Yeah. And so, yeah, like you said, I mean, there will be street closures. It's going to, it's going to be an absolutely huge procession. There will be police, there will be firefighters involved in that. So, as far as the route itself, look for delays along that route anytime between 3 and 4.
Yeah. So the visitation's 11 until 1 in Liberty at Pleasant Valley Baptist Church. If you know it, you know it. The funeral service is from 1 until 2:30. The funeral procession is 3 until 4:30. Again, it will stop by Station 42 and then go back to Gladstone Whitechapel Funeral Home. The procession's going to go south on I-35 just after 3 p.m. through the I-29 interchange, go over the Bond Bridge, go US 71 south, exit at Bannister Road, also 95th Street. Head east and then turn south at Hillcrest Road. It'll go past Station 42, which is on Redbridge, go north to Blue Ridge Boulevard to Bannister, then 435 back, and then they'll go up to Whitechapel Funeral Home after that. So it's a pretty big route to get you from Liberty down to Redbridge Road and back. So just keep that in mind for later today. And I'm sure we'll hear updates coming out of the wake and the lines and that kind of thing. So we'll keep you posted on that a little bit later today. Okay, then Pettis County. I learned about this when Channel 5 was streaming live on Facebook about this. Luckily, these two deputies are expected to be okay. Non-life-threatening injuries.
Yeah.
The Highway Patrol is investigating this now. Pettis County is what Sedalia is in, for those who don't know some of the geography of Missouri. But they were serving a search warrant. And I believe I heard somewhere it was related to drug charges.
Yes.
And they were trying to serve this search warrant. And one deputy's already been released from the hospital, but they encountered shots and one of the deputies shot back, but did not hit the suspect.
Yeah.
Suspect's in custody.
He is in custody and they were both hospitalized with non-life-threatening injuries. As you said, Missouri Highway Patrol is investigating the incident, which is normal when you have sheriff's deputies who were shot for Missouri Highway Patrol to come in and do the investigation, because that way there's no conflict and you don't have to have somebody investigating a shooting who is a colleague of the person who was shot.
Right. And that's all we know right now. But again, it's, you're serving a search warrant at 6:40 in the morning is when this happened. And you just never know what you are going to encounter, particularly when you are encountering someone at their home and they are not happy that you are there. And so, and that's exactly what went down. And we are familiar with that. So again, at least they're both expected to recover, and I'm sure we'll learn more about that investigation. We have updates on, as we get closer to the date where the committee is going to meet. I don't know why I cannot breathe today. Where the committee is going to meet and try to choose a new pope. We'll talk about the chimney in a minute. I didn't know. I thought the chimney was just always there. I didn't know that they take it down and they put it back.
I thought so, too. And yeah, but there are pictures this morning of workers in the Vatican, in Vatican City, who are putting up the chimney. So it's also taller than I thought it was. Mm-hmm. It's hard to tell perspective because usually that's all we see is just the chimney itself. So it's hard to get, you know, a gauge of scale. But it's as tall, if not maybe a little bit taller, than the guy who's putting it up. So you figure that thing's got to be about 6 feet.
Can we describe this for a second? Because this is unless I'm wrong, this is a part of the building. Do they dismantle it? This isn't like, if there's such a thing as a portable chimney, this isn't like a little, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not just like a little smokestack. This is a bigger chimney that they build and then I guess take down when they don't need it.
And it's made out of metal. It looks like I said, it's about 6 feet tall and it's got a cap on the top of it. I don't know what's underneath it. I guess, I mean, there's a hole, obviously, with another chimney that goes down to wherever they release the smoke from. But I guess they just put a cover over it when they're not using it.
Yeah. So the Sistine Chapel undergoes a, quote, radical transformation. So it's ready for this. You have 133 cardinal electors that get together secretly in the Sistine Chapel. And that starts on May 7th. And then we wait for the smoke. CNN will have a camera on that chimney. And if it's black smoke, it means we don't have a new pope. And if it's white, it means we do have a new pope. And I remember that was one of the first times I slept at the radio station.
Yeah.
Was when this pope was chosen, because it was over a weekend. And we were going to make that announcement no matter what had happened. I wasn't here. I was in Illinois at the time. And somebody had to be there to put that on the air when we had the white smoke.
The lengths that they go to, I was reading this morning in a separate article about what they're allowed to eat while conclave is going on.
Oh, really?
And yeah. Okay. Things like you can't serve ravioli, because if you do, somebody in the kitchen staff might stick a note into the ravioli for one of the cardinals. They're so serious about secrecy. This article even makes mention of the fact that they, before conclave starts, they sweep the Sistine Chapel for bugs to make sure that nobody planted a bug in there so that they could hear what the cardinals were saying from the outside.
I mean, it would be the biggest get if you were to, you know, have a story.
If you were to beat the smoke, so to speak. Absolutely.
Yeah. They have to turn in their phones. I mean, they have to do the same thing that you would do, like it's a rock concert or something. But I wonder if they have to sign, like, non-disclosure forms or anything. But yeah, they take their phones away. They are not allowed to communicate with the outside world during that time.
That was the other thing about the food, by the way, is that they're not allowed napkins because they might write a note on a dirty napkin and get it out of the room somehow. Yeah, it's bizarre how far they go.
So the first vote will be held on Thursday evening, Rome time, which is their 7 hours. Is it ahead or behind? How do we say that? They're 7 hours later than us. So midday our time. There will be further rounds of voting, 2 in the morning, 2 after lunch, until a decision on who will be the pope.
And it could take a while. I mean, it has in the past. There have been incidents where there have been several votes with no clear winner.
None has gone more than 5 days. The average length of the last 10 conclaves was 3.2 days. So this will likely go into the weekend.
Yeah.
The process is fascinating. I didn't know any of that about what they can eat. Like they bring in the CIA. Who's the consultant on, on security and secrecy when you're choosing a new pope?
Not sure. We'll see. But yeah, what we do know is that the U.S. betting odds are out.
You know, heaven forbid we miss a chance to put money on something in the U.S., you know?
And why wouldn't you? In case you're wondering, the odds-on favorite to become the next pope is Cardinal Pietro Parolin, followed by Luis Antonio Tagle, Peter Turkson, Matteo Zuppi, Pier Battista Pizzaballa. That's the one that's everybody's.
And I'm glad you're on this one.
Just because they love the name, everybody's kind of you know leaning toward Pizzaballa. Peter Erdo, Giovanni Battista, Robert Serra, Claudio Gugarotti, and Jean-Luc Aveline.
Are any of them American, U.S.?
I don't think so. Most of them sound Italian, but I get Peter Turkson perhaps could be. And he's number three. Let me see if I can find out a little bit more about him. Yeah, I didn't know the names of any of the Cardinals except for Pizzaballa.
I wouldn't know.
He's Ghanaian.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, that'd be cool. That'd be different.
Yep.
Go outside the box on this one.
Well, Pope Francis was the first South American pope. Have we had an African pope before?
I don't know. I don't have any idea. I don't. The only time I learn stuff about the pope is when we're choosing a new pope, it seems like. That's when I increase my knowledge of history.
There have not.
History.
There, I just checked. There, none of the 217 popes are believed to have come from Africa.
Well, it's time.
I guess
mix
so.
Mix it up a little bit.
I mean, he's number three. He could pull into the lead. You never know.
Yeah. I love it. I can't imagine how much money is on this in the U.S. right now. Okay, we'll take a break here. Still to come this hour, we have an update on speaking of names, Luigi Mangione, prosecutor. We have an update on that case. We'll get to that coming up. The man accused of killing the CEO of United Healthcare is in the news for a couple of reasons. He's going to be the subject of an entertainment. I don't even know what to call it, but we'll get to that here in a second. Somebody thought this was ripe for a musical.
Oh, Lord.
We'll get to that here in a couple of minutes. But there are other developments on this first.
Yeah, and a kind of a strange one. And nobody seems to have the real reason why this is going on, but we'll talk about some possibilities of what may be going on behind the scenes here. But the prosecutor, the top federal prosecutor in Manhattan, has been recused. I was going to say has recused himself, but even that's not clear. He has been recused from the case, so he's out. And as far as the reason why, Jim Clayton is his name, by the way. All they said is the government also writes to inform the court that the United States Attorney for the Southern District, Jay Clayton, is recused from this matter. We know who his replacement's going to be. And the only thing that seems to be that's mentioned in this article about why this is going on is that there was an incident a little while ago where a paralegal working for the prosecutor's office heard part of a recording of a jailhouse phone call between Luigi Mangione and his lawyer. Can't do that. Mm-hmm. But they said that the paralegal immediately, upon recognizing that it was an attorney call, stopped listening and hung up. They said, in fact, the paralegal listened to the entire call, then subsequently informed DANY, District Attorney of New York's prosecutors, about the identities of the people with whom the defendant spoke, according to Wednesday's letter. But it's odd, and it doesn't talk about the prosecutor himself. However, that may be the reason why. If there were discussions going on about what happened on that phone call and the prosecutor heard those, he would definitely have to recuse himself.
Yeah, it's odd that we don't know what the reason is. So then he's also seeking dismissal of the state murder case. Mm-hmm. He's basically claiming double jeopardy. Can't do federal and state at the same time. And wants the state murder case dropped.
And if that happens, it would likely be the state case that would be dropped. Mm-hmm. And there are questions already about why this was federally prosecuted anyway.
I don't know enough about why they would choose one way or another. He is facing charges like terrorism.
Yes.
And is that only a federal charge and not a state charge?
That could very well be.
So, So we'll wait and see what is new on that. Okay, look at this link I sent you out of people.com. It is sold out. The musical, I thought this was a joke, but people.com is not the only site that has this. This is in multiple news sources that I trust. Luigi the Musical debuts June 13th in San Francisco and will feature Sean Diddy Combs.
What? And Sam Bankman-Fried as characters. Now, Diddy's not going to be in it, but he will be a character in this.
I don't. So it is sold out for its entire run in San Francisco. I don't understand.
A wildly irreverent, razor-sharp comedy that imagines the true story of Luigi Mangione, the alleged corporate assassin. Yeah, we know that part. According to a release from the theater company, that's where that came from. They said it goes on to say that Mangione navigates friendship, justice, and the absurdity of viral fame, all with his real-life cellmates. Oh, I guess that's where Diddy and Sam Beckman-Fried come in. By his side. I mean, come on. Okay, it's a comedy, but still, should we be laughing at this yet? They say comedy is tragedy plus time. I mean, I get that piece, but still, not a lot of time has gone by.
This is out of Playbill.com. It'll premiere at the Taylor Street Theater in San Francisco, June 13th to 28th. It is 60 minutes. It has been created by a team of local theater makers, names I don't know. A wildly irreverent, razor-sharp comedy that imagines his true story. The alleged corporate assassin turned accidental folk hero. Oh my gosh. A musical? And we know how I feel about musicals in the first place.
Yeah, I didn't think you were going to buy a ticket for this one anyway.
I'm not running off to San Francisco on June 13th and trying to go somewhere to get tickets that have been sold out. What was that website that we said sometimes you can go on, you can, for the tickets that you already bought, you know, and they were trying to do that for restaurants and see if I can do that for San Francisco also.
Right. Yeah. I don't remember the name of it, but yeah.
If you like your comedy smart and your show, with a criminal record, Luigi is your new favorite felony. This is beyond me. This is just... There is a video here of Luigi the Musical behind the scenes. Johnny Stein is Luigi. J-O-N-N-Y. I just can't. Okay.
Does he look anything like him? Let me see if I can find a picture of Johnny Stein.
I just closed it.
Sure, in a general kind of way.
And Luigi's kind of a general looking guy.
True.
I mean, he's just kind of a tall, dark, and handsome average looking dude.
Yeah,
he'd be easy to cast.
Anybody with a square jaw and curly black hair, sure.
Right. Yeah. And a little bit dark complected could pull this off. So wow. Okay. That's one of the crazier ones we've seen in a while. Speaking of crazy, we need to go to the Northland and talk about the flyers that people there are dealing with.
Yeah, because what we really need, especially following the death of a black teenager, is for a bunch of flyers with swastikas to start showing up.
Great. That's awesome. It just went away. They include Nazi symbols, swastikas, other hate-filled imagery will tape to nearly every street light along multiple blocks in the Northland, 20 of them on utility poles.
And of course, what happened is what always happens in cases like this. People who are not stupid Nazis went around and just started tearing them down. So they're gone now. One of the residents said, we just went with a paint scraper and fingernails and just ripped down everything we could.
And this was after 17-year-old Charles Sanders was shot and killed nearby. This just is not necessary.
No.
It's doesn't help anything. Doesn't improve, the morale of the neighborhood or anything. So, and they don't know who did it. This is in the Northbrook subdivision, by the way, for those who are more familiar with Northland.
And, you know, what are you trying to prove? What's the point? Seriously, other than just making people angry, why? You know, so you can prove you have some value in this world. That's not going to do it.
Yeah, it makes no sense. All right, coming up, I want to talk about Steve Smith. It's one of the few times I have heard a lawsuit over this when it comes to a marriage or a divorce. We'll get to this coming up. Welcome in 913-586-7798. Okay. Before we talk about what he's accused of doing, who is Steve Smith Sr.?
Steve Smith Sr.
in this case, at least.
Is an NFL analyst, was a star wide receiver for the Carolina Panthers. He was the best player on their team for a lot of years.
Okay. He is being sued over the home wrecker law. He is being sued by the husband of, it's a marching band member, which is weird, but he's accused of having a month-long affair with a married Baltimore Ravens marching band member. And now her husband is suing him over the home wrecker law.
For $100,000. I mean, wow. It all came to light when a series of text messages, none of which we can read on the air, showed up online back a couple of months ago. And there's one of these texts that we can read. Me too. That's it. The rest of it, forget it. We're not reading any of that stuff. So, they were quite explicit. And so Martinez then texted Steve Smith and said, and I got to clean this one up a little bit too, "You're having sex with my wife, bro. What you got to say for yourself?" To which Steve Smith responded, "I'm sorry."
Wow. Okay. A version of the story that I have says that Antonio Martinez, who is the husband, posted images of the messages allegedly exchanged between his wife and Smith. Mm-hmm. Posted where? Do we know where? There's a critical detail that NBC Sports left out.
Yeah, social media somewhere. I can't tell by looking at it which one it is, though.
But I think that's interesting that that's part of, you know, like out of anger, posted those messages somewhere up online. The home wrecker law, and we have not talked about this in a while, allows a spouse to sue a third party for interfering and destroying a marriage's love and affection. We need to find out if we have this here.
It used to be fairly common. And when I say used to be, I mean a long time ago, like early 1800s. And they called it alienation of affection. Mm-hmm. And so now it's referred to as the homewrecker law, but it's effectively the same thing. Because marriage is a contract. It's a verbal contract that's witnessed by everybody that comes in and watches you get married. So it's enforceable, but almost nobody does it. And like you said, I mean, you've only heard of this happening once or twice. I've only heard of this happening once or twice, but here we go with another one. And it's, if you look at it one way, I mean, if you look at it simply that way as contract law, you can defend it and say, mm-hmm. all right, you know, you induced one of the members of that contract to breach the contract, and it's your fault that they did it. You could also look at it another way and say, boy, that's creepily similar to selling somebody your wife for $100,000.
Right. It takes out of it that she had any say in this case where it's him.
That's true, yeah.
It takes out of it that we all have choices, that it takes two people to have an affair. And she made that choice also.
I have a list.
But of course, say what?
I have a list of the states that it's the home wrecker laws are in.
Are we in it?
No states near us. I guess Utah's kind of close, but not really. Hawaii, Illinois, New Mexico, North Carolina, Mississippi, South Dakota, and Utah. I was surprised that this is not like all southern states, which makes me a bad person, but I'm surprised that it's not all like
I'm with you.
Mississippi, Alabama, Florida. But there you go. There's your list. And some of these states, it's called alienation of affection.
There you go.
Right. Yeah. But it takes out of it. It assumes that the only person that has the power to ruin that relationship is this other guy, mm-hmm. and that she had nothing to do with it. And so, okay, like I can see how if you're the husband, you don't want to think that your wife would have anything to do with it. You want to go after the other guy, but you're right. It does have this very old, you're the woman and you stay in your, you know,
right
in your place aspect to it.
And clearly from the text messages, she was very involved in the decision making on this. Wow.
Yeah. And it's the Charlotte Observer that had a lot of these details. If you are so inclined to, wow. Okay, so yeah, I just saw more of the, that'll stop a person in their tracks. they were posted on X, on Twitter.
Was it? Okay.
That's where he put them. Yeah, they have since been deleted because even X will not, even Elon Musk doesn't like that kind of stuff up there. And again, he called Smith to try to confront him over it, and Smith didn't really have a good argument for it. They apparently met at her job. With the marching band.
Yeah, she was getting ready. You know, she was getting ready for the marching band bit. He was covering the game. So I'm assuming it was probably the Ravens playing the Panthers. And yeah, they met and sparks flew, I guess.
I would love to know, and Quentin, if we can find this, how often these lawsuits end in a judgment against the defendant, I guess. You know, how often the plaintiff wins in these home wrecker lawsuits. How, because these laws are very outdated, right? I mean, these are very antiquated laws. But yes, marriage is a contract. Should we enforce this more? Should we get more states with this law in the books?
Yeah, according to a post on justanswer.com, how hard is it to win an alienation of affection case? From a lawyer by the name of J.D. Palmo. Alienation of affection is almost impossible to win. Courts all across the U.S. have found that alienation of affection is junk science and thus will not recognize any expert testimony on the subject. There's a small group out there that goes around the country pursuing these alienation claims, trying to find some court to accept them as valid ground. But to date, no state has recognized it as a valid scientific theory because the testing can't be replicated. Okay, that's fine. Mm-hmm. That's saying, okay, you can't get expert testimony. That may make it more difficult to win, but you've got to convince a jury that mm-hmm. that this is something you can and should sue over.
Okay, so let's go back to for a second it being about breach of contract. In this case, Steve Smith didn't sign that contract. That contract was not between him and anybody else.
Right.
So why not sue your wife?
That's a great point. Technically you could go after both of them, her for breach and him for inducing breach. The last one that I can find that was successfully prosecuted or that led to a successful suit was eventually overturned. And even that was 40 years ago, 1984.
Okay. The lawsuit contains claims for alienation of affection, intentional infliction of emotional distress, and negligent infliction of emotional distress. All that could go against his wife. But I think it's easier and more convenient to go after the other guy.
Yeah. Because
the money, money is our money.
Right. And you're also trying to punish him, you know, right. Because in your mind, I guess not in your mind, Jamie, specifically, but,
no,
but in the mind of the person who is cheated on, you always have a greater degree of animus toward the other person of your same sex.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And you don't want to think that the person that you love would do this.
Yeah, it's
even
always
it takes two.
It's never you left me for him. It's he stole you.
Right. Are they getting a divorce, by the way?
It's not specific about that. So I don't know if he's filed for divorce or if he's going to.
That is a critical detail.
Mm-hmm.
If they are staying together, how do you have a case for a lawsuit?
Yeah.
Because although it just says, one version of this that I have out of North Carolina says, you sue for interfering with and destroying a marriage's love and affection. But you could still be married.
Yeah.
I guess. I don't know why you want to be, but I guess it should be.
Yeah. I can understand the emotion behind filing the lawsuit, but I don't think this one's probably going much of anywhere.
It's also only $100,000.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like if you're going to sue,
go big,
man.
Yeah, really. He made millions during his NFL career. I don't know what he's got left, but certainly he's had a successful career as an analyst since then, and those guys get paid pretty well.
I have a case worth more than $100,000, also out of North Carolina. Back in 2017, the man won his lawsuit against his wife for $750,000.
So he did sue his wife in that case.
He did sue his wife, and he won the case, though the lawyer of the man said, quote, he is unlikely to see the money. So maybe that's just because she doesn't have $750,000. Mm-hmm. In the article, it says that from tort law, it says that the guy just believed in the sanctity of marriage and that other families should see what the consequences are of not only breaking the vow to what religion you subscribe to, but also your legal responsibilities.
Sure.
Uh-huh. Huh. Okay.
And again, North Carolina. Right. So it had to come out of the South.
I wonder if this husband thinks he has a better chance of winning in court if the amount isn't exorbitant, if it's a smaller amount of money.
Could be.
Because it looks like he's not doing it for the money. You know, because if he was doing it for the money, Steve Smith's got it, go for millions.
Sure.
It looks like he's not looking at it that way. It appears as though it's about his broken heart.
I would love to see, I doubt this is going to happen, but I would love to see this go to summary judgment, just have a judge decide, because I mean, that could have some interesting consequences. I would love to see what a judge would write in an opinion, or what he would say in either granting or dismissing the lawsuit.
If you want to talk about this, I think it's fascinating. 913-586-7798. Should we have this more? Should we have more states with this law on the books? We'll wrap the hour next. So we were talking about the homewrecker law because there is a case being filed in North Carolina because Steve Smith, who used to play for the Panthers and now is a commentator, had an affair, and the woman's husband found out about it. There's a lot of evidence of this affair, a lot of very racy evidence, and says, hey, Steve Smith, this is all your fault, man. I want $100,000. We'll see where this goes. But Quentin just found the story of Ben Zobrist, who, as we all know, used to play for the Kansas City Royals. Mm-hmm. I'm sure we talked about this, although 2021 seems forever and a half ago. but yes, I remembered that we talked about this. Keeping in mind, we don't have the homewrecker law here, but Ben Zobrist sued Quinn. If we can find how this ended, like, was there ever any news about how this, whether he won this lawsuit? But he sued his pastoral counselor for having an affair with his wife.
He dropped it. He dropped the lawsuit.
Okay. Because they filed that in Tennessee, where they don't have a homewrecker law. But we have an old story out of Channel 41 that claims that his last name is Jan, this guy. Jan exploited his knowledge of marital difficulties gained through counseling. They were in counseling.
Wow.
To his advantage. And even, this is scandalous, and even allegedly counseled Ben Zobrist to give his wife some space.
So
you're in a position to influence the outcome of this marriage.
Wow.
And you use it to your advantage so that you can get with the wife. Wow.
This is odd. According to, and this is from August 14th of 2021, which is apparently when the lawsuit was dropped, out of the Chicago Cubs, for whom I guess he was playing at the time, they said Ben Zobrist suspiciously drops $6 million divorce lawsuit.
It doesn't say anything else.
I mean, it goes on to just talk about the proceedings, but it said, I don't know why they say it's suspicious.
Maybe because we don't know why.
Withdrew the claim. The manner in which he withdrew the claim allows him to refile within 12 months, which apparently he didn't. So, yeah, I just totally bizarre. But I guess, yeah, he thought better of it. And maybe that's why. Maybe somebody told him, hey, listen, there is no mechanism in the law in the state of Tennessee that would let you do this.
Did they get divorced? Are they still together? Do we know? Because there were divorce filing documents in 2020. And that's how a lot of this came to light. And those were filed in June of 2020. And they say that that's when Ben Zobrist discovered the relationship between his wife and this pastor was physical.
Let's see. In May 2019, he filed for legal separation, citing inappropriate marital conduct. On the same day, she filed for divorce in Illinois.
Okay.
In a deposition for the divorce, she admitted having an affair with the former pastor and marriage counselor. So I'm guessing, yeah, she filed for divorce and that they are now divorced.
They used burner phones. That's how they communicated. The pastor, anytime a burner phone is involved, you know it's bad.
Uh-huh.
But it was the pastor's wife who discovered that there was a burner phone and told Ben Zobrist, I think our spouses are having an affair. Wow. I didn't know. I didn't remember any of this.
She's an American Christian musician who performs Christian pop in the style of electronic dance music. Is there anybody involved in Christian music who doesn't have affairs? Because the only ones that I know of are her and Amy Grant. And well,
yeah,
kind of speaks for itself.
But it's funny because when Ben Zobrist was here, they were, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Baseball in town. I mean, with the cute kids and this beautiful couple, and he was such a big deal here. And then he goes to the Cubs and they win the World Series. I mean, it was, you know, it was a lot of this was a surprise. This is a TV movie.
Yeah.
I mean, the way that this unfolded, it's unfortunate. I don't mean to make light of it, but yeah. Interesting. Okay. Well, now we know all about the background of those laws. Okay. So speaking of exes and maybe what not to do when you're mad at your ex, in this case, we have a police officer involved.
Yes, we do. A police officer, female police officer, who found out that, well, I guess she had broken up with this guy and then apparently wasn't real happy about the fact that he found a new woman and broke into his house and assaulted both of them, threatened to burn the place down. And not exactly the conduct you want in a police officer.
This was in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
She was apparently off duty at the time of the alleged incident.
Well, that's good. Yeah, Toms River, New Jersey.
Okay. She damaged the hood of a vehicle that belonged to one of the victims that was in the driveway. She initially resisted efforts to peacefully put her under arrest. The boyfriend was at home with another woman when she broke in, hit both of them.
Smashed the front glass door of the residence, and that's how she gained entry. So, it is an advertisement for getting a door that doesn't have a full glass front.
I mean, it is just amazing after, I think this is hard for some of us to imagine. Your relationship ends, and, you know, that's hard. Breakups are hard. Grief is hard. It's hard when you know that they moved. Somebody always moves on first. Somebody's always in a relationship first.
Yeah.
It's better to just not know, but it's hard when you find out. It's hard, like, when your friends tell you. Don't go all nuts on it and go over there.
What is this lawsuit? There's a suit that's involved in this as well.
I see that. Mm-hmm.
And she's suing. According to the suit, the superior officers spread false and defamatory rumors that she was sleeping with various male coworkers and also commented on commented on plaintiff's appearance and insinuated that plaintiff could not complete the responsibilities for her position. So she's suing the department.
Yeah, she says she was denied promotions, even though she did a really good job as a cop. I mean, until all of this.
I don't think she's going to get very many promotions now.
No. All right. Coming up in the next hour. So this happens in couples sometimes. One of you is doing a good job staying fit. The other one is letting it go. What do you do? How do you get one to go the other way? Talk about that next.